Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We are coming to you live right here from the world headquarters in Los Angeles, California. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, for the night. My guests are Graham Hancock, Daryl Sims, and John Rappaport. Yeah, it's going to be one of those shows. Graham is going to be here to discuss his new book, Magicians of the Gods. And then Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, will be here to talk about his latest cases involving alien implants. And then later, we'll be taking your calls. But first up tonight, we have John Rappaport. And we're going to be discussing the latest news, including the Egypt Air crash, the movie Vaxxed, ADHD in our schools. And of course, we always have the latest on the NSA surveillance that is going on around the country. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, for the evening, and you can follow me right now on Twitter at JChurchRadio. I keep Twitter live to my left throughout the show, and hang with us. This is going to be late night radio at its very finest, and we're going to be right back with John Rappaport. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, for the evening, and tonight, John Rappaport is first up. We've got a full show tonight of conversations. So just get comfortable, get your blankie, get your drink of choice, get a heater going, get comfortable, get close to the speaker, and let's do this. It's going to be a dynamic evening tonight. And John Rappaport is widely regarded as one of the most important investigative reporters in the world. He has worked in this area for 30 years. He's written articles on everything, deep politics, health and medicine, the NSA surveillance, the Matrix, and the world that we lived in. And he was also nominated for Pulitzer by the LA Weekly early on in his career when the president of El Salvador University and the military had invaded that campus. He has lots of books out there, and his website is nomorefakenews.com, and it should be your daily stop for news every morning when you get up. And we're going to bounce around a bunch of the headlines tonight because I believe that conspiracy is the new normal. It's all around us today. And the one guy that I turn to every single day, not only on my show on Fade to Black, but here at Coast to Coast, and I want to welcome back John Rappaport. John, are you there?
I am. Good to be here, Jimmy.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice, my friend. And, you know, I talk to you every day, John, and we cover the news together all week long. And the one thing that I have to ask you, in this last year of this news cycle, does anything surprise you these days? And how do you interpret the news, and how do you figure out what's real and what's not?
Great question. No, nothing surprises me anymore. I mean, nothing, absolutely nothing. Shocked, but not surprised. It's not easy covering the waterfront because there are so many breaking stories in so many parts of the world now. But there are certain things that tie stories together. And I guess you could say, as a reporter, my job over the long term has been to figure out what some of these common denominators are so that I'm not looking at 1,000 stories a day. I can see what the dots are, connect the dots in a number of areas, and add them up. So that's kind of my MO from the time that I get up in the morning until I go to sleep.
Well, and there's something else that we're in the middle in right now. And without choosing sides and without naming candidates, it doesn't matter. But we are in an election year. And is this the, you know, I try to remain objective and I stand right down the middle. I don't endorse anybody. I'd rather report the story instead of report the person. But is this the craziest election year ever?
The craziest I've seen. And we haven't even seen the beginning of it yet. Relative to what's going to happen this summer, it's going to be a 17-ring circus on both sides, and it's going to get extremely heavy because both sides are loading up with a lot of ammunition to attack the other side. It's one of these things where who fires the first really heavy shot, and then the opponent comes back with something they consider equally heavy. So it's going to be down and dirty from now until, Election Day is done. And I see this as a pivotal point. And also, we're going to see some incredible skullduggery between now and whoever is announced as the winner. So, yeah, I would have to say, craziest election season that I've ever seen.
Who is responsible? Is it the candidates? Is it the parties? Or is it the media? Or is it a combination?
Yeah, it's a combination. It's a combination, but what I would have to take this back to is the government is, 100 governments in terms of their size. This was never the point of having a republic in the first place, based on the Constitution, that you would have a government with agencies that are so incredibly gigantic. And getting bigger and bigger and bigger all the time, and passing more laws and so forth and so on. And these agencies are permanent, so many of the key employees just stay on from one term to another. They don't move. And their specialty is taking a piece of legislation that's passed and then framing a whole set of regulations that are supposed to be in line with that piece of legislation. But as it turns out, what these agencies do is they bend the legislation. They bend it. They bend it this way and that way and this way and that way and frame the regulations that they want to enforce.
I find that statement interesting, and I want to talk about Egypt Air, and we're going to jump to that in just a second because that is the breaking news of the week, and it's astonishing what's going on right now in the Mediterranean. But with what you're talking about now and WikiLeaks and your information that you had just written about, I think it's a great report, but WikiLeaks seems to be an NSA, CIA, government bureaucracy type of leakage. That's what it centers around in the military. But you would think that there would be some medical stuff that is released in WikiLeaks. It doesn't seem to be there. Or, Cryptome or public intelligence and other websites like that. Why is it that that isn't leaked? Or is it leaked, but they don't publish it?
No, I think it's that it's, well, it's a combination, but mostly it's not leaked, which tells you that the medical cartel, as I call it, is the best protected cartel in the world. Because amongst all the documents that are leaked and so on and so forth, and all the information that I've accumulated over the years investigating medical stories, I mean horrendous medical stories in terms of the damage that's done by the medical cartel to humans, there are endless numbers of documents there that could be leaked that would expose all of this down to the ground, including the names of people and what they did, and so on and so forth. But this is held more closely than anything that Edward Snowden ever stole from the National Security Agency. It is much better protected, and the media are much more on the side of and partnering with the medical apparatus, so that even if it were leaked to major media, you would not see the exposure. They would just absolutely bury it. And what I'm saying here is based on 30 years of experience, because, as I say, I've been publishing information that has been kept from the public for a long time. And every time I've tried to get major media interested in this, the door is absolutely slammed shut.
I did a story earlier this week. You and I talked about it. I can't remember who published it originally, but it made it out. And that was the number two cause of death in the United States, 250,000 people per year. I think that was the rough number, are caused by doctors. And you would think that if any story had legs and was going to take off and cause alarm, it would be this one. And it seemed to peter out within hours.
Yeah, I've seen this happen before, Jimmy, many times. If you want to extrapolate that out, folks out there in the listening audience, 250,000 deaths a year caused directly by the medical system would give you over well over 2 million deaths per decade.
And what does that tell you? There has to be something behind that that could be documented and leaked, but yet it's not there. And I don't understand that kind of power. Or is that the whistleblowers that would be willing to leak those documents are completely scared and won't do it?
Well, they have to be completely scared because the information is there from private conferences, from studies that are cooked, as I would call them, you know, lying studies on the safety of this drug and that drug and so forth and so on. When you add it all up, this is what you get. And there are people who have attended conferences and meetings where the discussions have been about how are we going to keep this from the public and how are we going to promote ourselves as the most important people in the world, the doctors, et cetera, et cetera. And these documents and these conversations could be released. They could be released. And occasionally you'll see something, but it's never pounded on by investigations by in say a Watergate fashion where month after month more people come out of the closet and make confessions. This Washington Post story about third leading cause of death in the U.S., you know, from doctors and medical treatment, as you say, it sank like a stone. It was there and now it's gone. Well, in any sane universe, if the media outlet were not part of the problem, they would take 10 of their best reporters and say, we're going to cover this for the next year or 2 years. You're going to be out there pounding the pavement, finding out how this happened, who's responsible, who's going to confess, who covered it up. We're going to make this a gigantic story, but it doesn't happen. It's not an Edward Snowden type story for them. They would rather release what Snowden has done than to contradict all the medical propaganda that is floating around.
Let's bounce over to the Mediterranean. The other night, live during my broadcast, the news broke about Egypt Air. And when I read the headline, it was right in the middle of my broadcast. Another plane has, you know, been lost from radar. Now, what I don't understand here is that it was over the Mediterranean, which is one of the most heavy trafficked maritime areas in the world, probably the most, I would think. And not only that, but it's air traffic. It's the military. It's the instability of the Middle East and the navies that are there and the aircraft that are patrolling the skies constantly, radar constantly on. And it took 2.5 days for them to locate anything. What does that tell you? And is it something that the message is, I guess, if you're going to crash, we're not going to be able to find any survivors. You know, that's the message indirectly. And I'm not really comfortable with a 2.5 day location of wreckage.
Yeah, we talked about this. I would liken it to a parking lot outside a supermarket. And you've got maybe 100 policemen looking for a car in the parking lot, and they say they can't find it. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. As we discussed, the Mediterranean is one of the most trafficked areas on the planet. Everything that you can imagine is there. Small boats, big boats. You've got radar, you've got military, you've got satellites, you've got everything. And to me, it's completely absurd to say it took us this long to find any debris from the plane.
If there were any survivors, right? If there were any survivors, then they didn't survive, right? If there was any survivors hoping for something, some type of rescue, it obviously just didn't happen. And that's what's frightening.
It is, because those people would expect that somebody would arrive. You know, this is not like being caught out in the North Atlantic or somewhere out beyond, you know, Hawaii in the middle of the Pacific where it's just so far out that it's not going to happen. But if there were any survivors, they would be saying, well, you know, this is horrendous and, you know, they're terrified, but it's the Mediterranean, so I've got a chance here of being rescued. didn't happen, not even close. And it's completely insane that the media, again, did not jump on this and point it out immediately. Why wasn't this plane identified right away, where it went, where it landed, where it crashed, what happened?
Yeah, after MH370, right, you would have thought that things were now in place to prevent this exact situation from happening again. This exact situation. But yet it did. What is it going to take for the airline industry and regulations to step up to make sure that this never happens again?
Well, I have to speculate, and it isn't just aimless, that there may have been a reason why, intentionally, they didn't find the debris and the plane and so forth in all of that time, because somebody knew something and didn't want it to be revealed about the source, perhaps, of why this plane crashed. Something that would have been obvious if they had immediately gone to the spot where they knew the plane was. And they didn't want that. In other words, they wanted all that evidence to sink to the bottom of the ocean before they suddenly said, here it is, we found it.
Including eyewitnesses?
Eyewitnesses, including physical evidence that may never be recovered. All of that.
That's interesting. And you have to stop and ask, why would it take, two and a half days? They should have been on the crash scene, and probably were, within 30 minutes or an hour, I would imagine. But and that didn't happen. And the one thing that I had stressed, John, is we need to hold back on the conspiracy ideas. Let's figure out, let's let them rescue, let's get the details and let's go. But then when 2.5 days pass, then we start to write our own dialogue here. We write our own story, and our imaginations start to put different theories on the table. And now we almost have to look at the reasons why it took 2.5 days.
Absolutely. Because if it didn't have to, that means it didn't. That means they knew. They knew quickly where it was. And to not say, we've got it, it's here, now you have to say, well, why didn't they do that? I mean, it's entirely reasonable to begin to look at potential motives behind this. Yes, absolutely.
Do you think with the real-time telemetry and the ACAR system, and I'm referring to, Rolls-Royce engines and the leasing of the plane and maintenance, and all of that telemetry that is going up to the satellites, going back down to maintenance technicians, where everything is monitored 24/7 live, right? And after MH370, when those questions were raised, that they would have been more forthcoming with the digital information that they had. Also, with the satellites, military and surveillance stuff that are positioned over the Mediterranean, that all of this information should have been brought to the public immediately. This is exactly what happened. Instead, they waited for 2 days. And maybe, I'm not suggesting anything, but it feels like when you do something like that, you're either misleading or you need to hide something.
Yeah. And my conclusion would be it's both. They're misleading because they're hiding something. Or they suspected something and they were hoping that wasn't the case, and they said, okay, look, we'd rather just let this go in case what we suspect is true, which is XYZ, and that's a story we don't want to let out to the public. So therefore, we're going to find this plane, in heavy quotes, 2 days from now, not 30 minutes after it crashed.
Right. And with this is what's interesting, especially with you, is when we are looking at news, whether it's Facebook or the internet or however we're getting our news fix on, we assume that we are not being misled. And then the news came out last week, it started to trickle out the week before, that Facebook was censoring what should have been an automatic filter on trending. And when this news breaks and it turns out that the conspiracy theories were actually correct this time, that it wasn't automatic and that our news was being filtered and was not actually what was really trending on Facebook. Is this when you have to step in and start to question everything?
You bet.
We're going to talk about this right when we come back after the break. It's a fascinating story, and then we're going to jump into the NSA. Our guest tonight, John Rappaport, his website, nomorefakenews.com. I'm yours, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. This is Coast to Coast AM. You can catch George Norrie's internet TV show Beyond Belief for dynamic discussions on the paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, and all things unexplained. You can check out the previews right now with James Fox and Deborah King. I was watching them during the break. You can sign up for just 99 cents for the first month and enjoy hours of fascinating past shows. Just go to beyondbelief.com. My guest tonight, our Graham Hancock. He's going to be here in just a bit to discuss his book, Magicians of the Gods. And then later on tonight, Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, is going to be here. And we're not only going to talk about his recent cases of alien implants, but we're also going to take your calls. First up tonight is John Rappaport and NoMoreFakeNews.com. We're going to continue our discussion of breaking stories right after this. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Our guest tonight, John Rappaport, and we're discussing the latest news headlines. And John, with George Orwell's 1984 and his description of the future and his warnings of that, certainly we're living in that now. And Big Brother today is definitely Facebook. There's no question about it. And so many of us depend on Facebook for the news and honest reports of what is trending. And that was a digital filter. And it turns out that is not the case. Is this an example now of our news actually being controlled, what we are being fed?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, Facebook wants to make itself basically into the internet. It wants to keep people on Facebook all the time. And so it does all sorts of things, and it introduces various, quote, innovations in order for that to happen, such as presenting the news on Facebook. But then we are now looking at another central point of distribution that decides what news gets through, what news doesn't, et cetera, et cetera. And this can even get to the point where, okay, so for these users that are interested in this sort of thing, we will give them this news. But it looks like the news when it really isn't. So for sure, filter this out, present that kind of news. Don't let these stories in, let those stories in instead. It's absolutely happening. And it is Orwellian, no question about it, because as more and more people spend their lives on Facebook, they're getting a completely distorted picture of what reality actually is. So what we're talking about here at the deepest level is building reality, creating reality for the population of Earth. This is the mandate that major media have carried for a very, very long time. And now in the digital age, we are seeing this implemented with increasing technological acuity, such as what's happening at Facebook, no question about it.
Now that Facebook has been caught officially, can we expect changes?
No, I don't think so. I think you might find an apology here or there, or we made a mistake, or there was a little snafu that happened, and an algorithm misfunctioned, etc. You know, the usual. But it's not going to change. I don't think there's any chance of it changing.
With this type of influence over society in general, and how it is in such a large scale, when it comes to Facebook, it's just beyond anything that we could have thought of even, you know, as little as 10 years ago. The influence is now, it's huge, and it's worldwide, and it's global. And then we're dealing with the NSA and what is come to light over the last couple of weeks, not only with Snowden since 2013, but the reports coming out of the NSA get more disturbing every single time something breaks. And how do we control the NSA? And where is the responsibility, and who does the NSA actually answer to, if anybody?
I don't think they answer to anybody. You know, there are regulations that you could cite, and we have these investigators and so forth. The NSA is organized under the Pentagon, and the Pentagon is in the executive branch, and so we're talking about the White House ultimately and the president. But this is so gigantic, the NSA, in terms of its reach, how much data they suck up every second of every day, how they compartmentalize it, how they analyze it, how they pass certain pieces of it along. It's beyond the point where somebody could come in from the outside who is part of the government and say, okay, we're going to take this whole thing apart. No, that is not going to happen. Absolutely not. That is not going to happen. And, you know, there's elements of what the NSA is doing, such as they are monitoring financial transactions that are happening all over the world every second, big time transactions, transfers of currency and so forth. And it's only a very small step from that for them to be able to accumulate gigantic amounts of data on, say, the stock market, to spy on people, insiders, Wall Street insiders, to accumulate billions of pieces of data on how the market is working and who's making it move in which directions, in order to actually rig the stock market, to invest through a series of fronts, huge amounts of money, and make profits going up and coming down and going up and coming down. And that's just the beginning of what they can do. And this has not been examined in any degree whatsoever.
A report came out this week that the NSA in the past, which was just changed, which is equally as frightening, by the way, that they were able to go five steps deep into a cell phone and how that extended out. And now they are clear today. They can only go two steps deep from one cell phone. But what that means when you go two steps out through contacts and phone calls, that one cell phone can potentially reach, on average, 25,000 individuals and their contacts. And that's when you're talking about one cell phone and somebody's contacts, it doesn't seem that significant. But they can, without a warrant, spread out to 25,000 individuals, potentially completely innocent people, that would have their privacy checked into and without regulation. And that is frightening.
Oh, yeah. You bet it is. And there are no controls in place to stop it. This is potentially now the most powerful agency of the U.S. government, because they can also spy on people inside the government. And there are many people inside the government who have secrets to hide, personal secrets. So now we would be talking about blackmail, the potential for blackmail, extortion, making deals. We'll keep this data secret if you do this for us. This could not only extend inside the U.S. government, but inside corporations, foreign governments. It's unlimited. It really is unlimited. This thing that has been unleashed is a meta level of surveillance and control that has gone completely beyond any regulations whatsoever.
Is it a playbook from the CIA?
I think in a sense it is, yes. But the thing about the NSA is they have captured the arena of what they call signals intelligence, which means electronic intelligence, as opposed to human intelligence on the ground, where you have more traditional kinds of spying and people working undercover and so forth. That has been the CIA's territory. But with the rise of the NSA, electronic signals intelligence has far outstripped anything that the CIA has been doing in terms of spying and surveillance.
It's frightening. It really is. And when you look at the extortion aspect of it and the conspiracy and criminality that is involved, but there is no oversight, it just seems like they don't have any fear, right? There's no fear there, and they know that there isn't going to be any implications or any rough roads ahead, so they just continue to move on administration.
Yes, and people have to recognize that one of their basic strategies is we're going to become so complicated that nobody can figure out what's going on.
Right, right.
They're going to build a labyrinth that's so extensive that they have nothing to fear. Oh, well, we lost a little bit here. This piece of legislation set us back a bit. But, of course, we've got research over here on 16 different ways that we can spy on people that nobody even knows about yet, and we're extending those out. And we're developing new technology that's going to allow us to do even more. So we're building out and building out and building out and building out until it becomes, as I say, so complex they have no fear, absolutely, because they're so huge.
You just wrote an excellent article on ADHD and what is causing it, and the possibility may be our very own school system today. And I want to quote you from the article really quick. You say that it's a method of teaching that surrenders ground on each key concept, deserting it before it's firmly fixed in the mind of the student. And I found that a fascinating thing to say. And can you expand on that for me?
Absolutely. I used to teach school, and I was sort of at the crossroads when the quality of education in America really suddenly declined, all of a sudden. I mean, it was bad enough already, but this really was a new low, and I saw it happening. And it's exactly that. The teacher decides, okay, I know how it should be done. If I'm teaching reading, you know, there are steps that you bring the student along. And at each step, you have to give the student enough exercises and examples and tests and quizzes and so forth so that the student gets the new thing, the new concept, the new idea firmly in his or her mind before we move on to the next thing. I mean, that's the way teaching used to be done. You could look at the old textbooks. I learned and I taught from a few of those. But then that stopped. The teacher said, you know, we don't really have enough time. And the students don't seem to be that interested. So we're going to give ground here. We're not going to try to embed firmly in the mind each one of these vital steps. Instead, we're just going to kind of gloss it over and move along and move along and move along and move along. And then if the kid can't do it, we promote him anyway and we graduate him, because what else are you going to do? And this attitude began to take hold. Well, that is the creation of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. You are actually creating it because you're never spending enough time on any one thing to make sure that everybody understands it. And so what you get is a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, and the student's confused, doesn't know what's happening, isn't confident, can't really ingest everything that's going on, can't perform, incompetent, isn't able to do it. Their attention is now being intentionally shortened at each step of the way. That's the definition of ADHD. And I saw other teachers creating it in front of my own eyes when I used to teach school. Here it is. Look, these kids are coming out and they're just completely baffled. They don't know what's happening. They don't know why. They don't understand things. They are just all over the place. And as this happens more and more, and we came into the information age, the one thing I'll add to that is now the idea is, well, the student has to pick and choose what they're interested in. It's kind of like a big mall education. What do you like? You like this? Let's talk about that. Let's do a little project here. Oh, yes, this is interesting. The student begins to think, well, reasoning, logic, thinking, all of this is nothing more than just, I like a little bit of this, and then I want to put a little of that on it, like a hot dog in the mall, and then, oh, this is okay, and I'll read a little paragraph here, and that's education. And people actually believe this is true now. It's just staggering.
The only way this can get corrected is for somebody like you to run for public office. which you did, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you run for office again? And why don't we have more politicians and city leaders stepping up and speaking about this?
Well, we don't have enough time to go into that one in length, but I'll just say that the night that I was running for a seat in the U.S. Congress in Los Angeles, the night of the election, we went down to where they were counting the votes. And in all of the time that we were there, and we were looking over the shoulder as the votes were being tallied and reported every half hour, the percentages between me and my opponent never changed all night. I don't know how that's possible. That would be a miracle. And we tried to find out how that was happening with the maze of computers they were using and couldn't do it, could not do it.
How do you select what to write on, John, before I let you go tonight? I want you to share with everybody, you know, why nomorefakenews.com is so important. How do you select what you're going to cover next? It's got to be complex. It can't be easy.
Yeah, it isn't just a one-stop shop. But the thing that I always try to show people when I'm investigating a particular story in the news and get behind that story into the deeper levels is, look, folks, somebody is creating reality for you. Here's how they're doing it. It's not just that they're distracting you or they're lying or they're covering things up. Yes, they're doing all of that. But at the bottom of it is the intention to create a reality that you will accept. Just like painting a mural on a wall and you look at it and you say, well, there it is. That is the deepest level of what they're doing. And when I find a story where I can show that cogently, then I'm in. That's what I want to do, because I want to let people see that. Here is how it's being done. Here's how the stage magic is actually happening. Here's how reality is being constructed for you. And the bottom line on that is, well, if they're doing it for you, why can't you do it yourself? Why do you have to take it from them?
Right. And is it the internet, John, that gives you that freedom? You don't have an editor or a news guy looking over your shoulder and saying no?
Yeah. Year 2000, 2001, when I went from being a reporter and an author in a traditional way to the internet, it was freedom. I mean, I can't tell you how long it used to take me sometimes to pitch a story to an editor, and then they say, we'll get back to you, and this and that, and we don't like this piece, and can you take that out? And all of a sudden, you write, you research, you post, it's there. Anybody in the world can read it. That, to me, was, you know, release from prison.
Thank you so much, John. His website is nomorefakenews.com. John Rappaport. I'm Real Jimmy Church. Next up, Graham Hancock is going to be right here. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.